Jamie. A white book sat on a white table in a white room. The room was round, its walls of whitewashed stone hung with white woolen tapestries. It formed the first floor of the White Sword Tower, a slender structure of four stories built into an angle of the castle wall overlooking the bay. The undercroft held arms and armor, the second and third floors the small, spare sleeping cells of the six brothers of the King's Guard. One of those cells had been his for 18 years, but this morning he had moved his things to the topmost floor, which was given over entirely to the Lord Commander's apartments. Those rooms were spare as well, though spacious, and they were above the outer walls, which meant he would have a view of the sea. "I will like that," he thought, "the view and all the rest." As pale as the room, Jamie sat by the book in his Kingsguard whites, waiting for his sworn brothers. A longsword hung from his hip, from the wrong hip. Before, he had always worn his sword on the left and drawn it across his body when he unsheathed. He had shifted it to his right hip this morning, so as to be able to draw it with his left hand in the same manner, but the weight of it felt strange there, and when he had tried to pull the blade from the scabbard, the whole motion seemed clumsy and unnatural. His clothing fit badly as well. He had donned the winter raiment of the King's Guard, a tunic and breeches of bleached white wool, and a heavy white cloak, but it all seemed to hang loose on him. Jamie had spent his days at his brother's trial, standing well to the back of the hall. Either Tyrion never saw him there, or he did not know him, but that was no surprise. Half the court no longer seemed to know him. "I am a stranger in my own house." His son was dead, his father had disowned him, and his sister, she had not allowed him to be alone with her once, after that first day in the royal sept where Joffrey lay amongst the candles. Even when they bore him across the city to his tomb in the great sept of Baelor, Cersei kept a careful distance. He looked about the round room once more. White wool hangings covered the walls, and there was a white shield and two cross longswords mounted above the hearth. The chair behind the table was old black oak, with cushions of blanched cowhide, the leather worn thin. "Worn by the bony ass of Barristan the Bold, and Sir Gerald Hightower before him. By Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, Sir Ryman Redwine, and the Demon of Dari. By Sir Duncan the Tall, and the Pale Griffin Alan Cunnington." How could the Kingslayer belong in such exalted company? Yet, here he was. The table itself was old weirwood, pale as bone, carved in the shape of a huge shield supported by three white stallions. By tradition, the Lord Commander sat at the top of the shield, and the brothers three to a side, on the rare occasions when all seven were assembled. The book that rested by his elbow was massive, 2 feet tall and 1.5 wide, 1,000 pages thick. Fine white vellum bound between covers of bleached white leather with gold hinges and fastenings. The Book of the Brothers was its formal name, but more often it was simply called the White Book. Within the White Book was the history of the King's Guard. Every knight who had ever served had a page to record his name and deeds for all time. On the top left-hand corner of each page was drawn the shield the man had carried at the time he was chosen, inked in rich colours. Down in the bottom right corner was the shield of the King's Guard, snow-white, empty, pure. The upper shields were all different. The lower shields were all the same. In the space between were written the facts of each man's life and service. The heraldic drawings and illuminations were done by septons, sent from the great sept of Baelor 3 times a year, but it was the duty of the Lord Commander to keep the entries up to date. "My duty now," once he learned to write with his left hand, that is. The white book was well behind. The deaths of Sir Mandon Moore and Sir Preston Greenfield needed to be entered, and the brief bloody Kingsguard service of Sandor Clegane as well. New pages must be started for Sir Balin Swan, Sir Osmond Kettleblack, and the Knight of Flowers. I will need to summon a septon to draw their shields. Sir Barristan Selmy had preceded Jamie as Lord Commander. The shield atop his page showed the arms of House Selmy, three stalks of wheat, yellow, on a brown field. Jamie was amused, though unsurprised, to find that Sir Barristan had taken the time to record his own dismissal before leaving the castle. Sir Barristan of House Selmy, firstborn son of Sir Lionel Selmy of Harvest Hall, served as squire to Sir Manfred Swan, named the Bold in his 10th year when he donned borrowed armour to appear as a mystery knight in the tourney at Blackhaven, where he was defeated and unmasked by Duncan, Prince of Dragonflies. Knighted in his 16th year by King Aegon V Targaryen, after performing great feats of prowess as a mystery knight in the winter tourney at King's Landing, defeating Prince Duncan the Small and Sir Duncan the Tall, Lord Commander of the King's Guard. Slew Meleys the Monstrous, last of the Blackfyre Pretenders, in single combat during the War of the Ninepenny Kings. Defeated Lormel Longlance and Cedric Storm, the Bastard of Brunsgate. Named to the King's Guard in his 23rd year by Lord Commander Sir Gerald Hightower. Defended the passage against all challengers in the tourney of the Silver Bridge. Victor in the melee at Maidenpool. Brought King Ares II to safety during the defiance of Duskendale, despite an arrow wound in his chest. Avenged the murder of sworn brother Sir Gawain Gaunt. Rescued Lady Jane Swan and her scepter from the Kingswood Brotherhood, defeating Simon Toyne and the Smiling Knight and slaying the former. In the Old Town tourney, defeated and unmasked the mystery knight Blackshield, revealing him as the Bastard of Uplands. Sole champion of Lord Stephen's tourney at Storm's End, whereat he unhorsed Lord Robert Baratheon, Prince Oberyn Martell, Lord Leighton Hightower, Lord John Connington, Lord Jason Mallister, and Prince Rhaegar Targaryen. Wounded by arrow, spear, and sword at the Battle of the Trident, was fighting beside his sworn brothers and Rhaegar, Prince of Dragonstone. Pardoned and named Lord Commander of the King's Guard by King Robert I Baratheon. Served in the honour guard that brought Lady Cersei of House Lannister to King's Landing to wed King Robert. Led the attack on Olwick during Balon Greyjoy's rebellion. Champion of the tourney at King's Landing in his 57th year. Dismissed from service by King Joffrey I Baratheon in his 61st year for reasons of advanced age. The earlier part of Sir Barristan's storied career had been entered by Sir Gerald Hightower in a big, forceful hand. Selmy's own smaller and more elegant writing took over with the account of his wounding on the Trident. Jamie's own page was scant by comparison. Sir Jamie of House Lannister, firstborn son of Lord Tywin and Lady Joanna of Castle Rock. Served against the Kingswood Brotherhood as squire to Lord Sumner Crakehall, knighted in his 15th year by Sir Arthur Dane of the King's Guard for valour in the field. Chosen for the King's Guard in his 15th year by King Ares II Targaryen. During the sack of King's Landing slew King Ares II at the foot of the Iron Throne, thereafter known as the Kingslayer. Pardoned for his crime by King Robert I Baratheon, served in the honour guard that brought his sister, the Lady Cersei Lannister, to King's Landing to wed King Robert. Champion in the tourney held at King's Landing on the occasion of their wedding. Summed up like that, his life seemed a rather scant and mingy thing. Sir Barristan could have recorded a few of his other tourney victories, at least. And Sir Gerald might have written a few more words about the deeds he'd performed when Sir Arthur Dane broke the Kingswood Brotherhood. He had saved Lord Sumner's life, as Big Belly Ben was about to smash his head in, though the outlaw had escaped him. And he'd held his own against the Smiling Knight, though it was Sir Arthur who slew him. What a fight that was, and what a foe! The Smiling Knight was a madman, cruelty and chivalry all jumbled up together, but he did not know the meaning of fear. And Dane, with dawn in hand... The outlaw's longsword had so many notches by the end that Sir Arthur had stopped to let him fetch a new one. "It's that white sword of yours I want," the robber knight told him as they resumed, though he was bleeding from a dozen wounds by then. "Then you shall have it, sir," the Sword of the Morning replied, and made an end of it. The world was simpler in those days, Jamie thought, and men as well as swords were made of finer steel. Or was it only that he had been 15? They were all in their graves now, the Sword of the Morning and the Smiling Knight, the White Bull and Prince Lewin, Sir Oswald Went with his black humour, Ernest John Derry, Simon Toyne, and his Kingswood Brotherhood, bluff old Sumner Crakehall, and me, that boy I was. When did he die, I wonder? When I donned the white cloak? When I opened Airy's throat? That boy had wanted to be Sir Arthur Dane, but someplace along the way he had become the Smiling Knight instead. When he heard the door open, he closed the white book and stood to receive his sworn brothers. Sir Osmond Kettleblack was the first to arrive. He gave Jamie a grin as if they were old brothers in arms.
"Sir Jamie," he said, "had you looked like this t'other night, I'd have known you at once."
"Would you indeed?" Jamie doubted that. The servants had bathed him, shaved him, and washed and brushed his hair. When he looked in a glass, he no longer saw the man who had crossed the riverlands with Brian, but he did not see himself either. His face was thin and hollow, and he had lines under his eyes.
"I look like some old man."
"Stand by your seat, sir." Kettleblack complied. The other sworn brothers filed in one by one. "Sirs," Jamie said in a formal tone, when all five had assembled, "who guards the king?"
My brothers, Sir Osney and Sir Osfrid,"
Sir Osmond replied.
"And my brother, Sir Garlon," said the Knight of Flowers.
"Will they keep him safe?"
"They will, my lord."
"Be seated, then." The words were ritual. Before the seven could meet in session, the king's safety must be assured. Sir Boris and Sir Merrin sat to his right, leaving an empty chair between them for Sir Aerys Oakheart, off in Dawn. Sir Osmond, Sir Balon, and Sir Loras took their seats to his left.
"The old and the new."
Jamie wondered if that meant anything. There had been times during its history when the King's Guard had been divided against itself, most notably and bitterly during the Dance of the Dragons. Was that something he needed to fear as well? It seemed queer to him to sit in the Lord Commander's seat, where Barristan the Bold had sat for so many years,
and even queerer to sit here crippled.
Nonetheless, it was his seat, and this was his King's Guard now.
Tommen's Seven.
Jamie had served with Merrin Trant and Boris Blunt for years. Adequate fighters, but Trant was sly and cruel, and Blunt a bag of growly air. Sir Balon Swan was better suited to his cloak, and of course the Knight of Flowers was supposedly all a knight should be. The fifth man was a stranger to him, this Osmond Kettleblack. He wondered what Sir Arthur Dane would have to say of this lot.
"How is it the King's Guard has fallen so low, most like?" "It was my doing," I would have to answer. "I opened the door and did nothing when the vermin began to crawl inside."
"The King is dead," Jamie began. "My sister's son, a boy of 13, murdered at his own wedding feast in his own hall. All five of you were present. All five of you were protecting him. And yet he's dead." He waited to see what they would say to that, but none of them so much as cleared a throat.
"The Tyrell boy is angry, and Balon Swan's ashamed," he judged.
From the other three, Jamie sensed only indifference.
"Did my brother do this thing?" he asked them bluntly. "Did Tyrion poison my nephew?"
Sir Balon shifted uncomfortably in his seat. Sir Boris made a fist. Sir Osmond gave a lazy shrug. It was Merrin Trant who finally answered.
"He filled Joffrey's cup with wine. That must have been when he slipped the poison in."
"You are certain it was the wine that was poisoned?"
"What else?" said Sir Boris Blunt. "The imp emptied the dregs on the floor. Why? but to spill the wine that might have proved him guilty.
He knew the wine was poisoned, said Sir Merrin.
Sir Balon Swan frowned.
The imp was not alone on the dais, far from it. That late in the feast we had people standing and moving about, changing places, slipping off to the privy. Servants were coming and going. The king and queen had just opened the wedding pie. Every eye was on them or those thrice-damned doves. No one was watching the wine cup.
Who else was on the dais? Asked Jamie.
Sir Merrin answered. The king's family, bride's family, Grand Maester Pycelle, the High Septon.
There's your poisoner,
suggested Sir Oswald Kettleblack with a sly grin.
Too early by half, that old man. Never liked the look of him myself.
He laughed. No, the Knight of Flowers said, unamused. Sansa Stark was the poisoner. You all forget my sister was drinking from that chalice as well. Sansa Stark was the only person in the hall who had reason to want Margaery dead, as well as the king. By poisoning the wedding cup, she could hope to kill both of them. And why did she run afterward, unless she was guilty?
The boy makes sense. Tyrion might yet be innocent.
No one was any closer to finding the girl, however. Perhaps Jaime should look into that himself. For a start, it would be good to know how she had gotten out of the castle.
Varys may have a notion or two about that.
No one knew the Red Keep better than the eunuch. That could wait, however. Just now, Jaime had more immediate concerns. You say you're the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, his father had said. Go do your duty. These five were not the brothers he would have chosen, but they were the brothers he had. The time had come to take them in hand. Whoever did it, he told them, Joffrey is dead, and the Iron Throne belongs to Tommen now. I mean for him to sit on it until his hair turns white and his teeth fall out, and not from poison. Jaime turned to Sir Boris Blunt. The man had grown stout in recent years, though he was big-boned enough to carry it. Sir Boris, you look like a man who enjoys his food. Henceforth, you'll taste everything Tommen eats or drinks. Sir Osmond Kettleblack laughed aloud, and the Knight of Flowers smiled. But Sir Boris turned a deep beet red.
I am no food taster. I am a knight of the King's Guard.
Sad to say you are.
Cersei should never have stripped the man of his white cloak. But their father had only compounded the shame by restoring it.
My sister has told me how readily you yielded my nephew to Tyrion's sellswords. You will find carrots and peas less threatening, I hope. When your sworn brothers are training in the yard with sword and shield, you may train with spoon and trencher. Tommen loves apple cakes. Try not to let any sellswords make off with them.
You speak to me thus? You? You should have died before you let Tommen be taken.
As you died, protecting Aerys, sir.
Sir Boris lurched to his feet and clasped the hilt of his sword.
I won't. I won't suffer this. You shall be the food taster, it seems to me. What else is a quibble good for?
Jaime smiled. I agree. I am as unfit to guard the king as you are. So draw that sword, your fondling, and we shall see how your two hands fare against my one. At the end, one of us will be dead, and the king's guard will be improved. He rose. Or if you prefer, you may return to your duties.
Bah!
Sir Boris hawked up a gob of green phlegm, spat it at Jaime's feet, and walked out, his sword still in its sheath.
The man is craven, and a good thing.
Though fat, aging, and never more than ordinary, Sir Boris could still have hacked him into bloody pieces.
But Boris does not know that, and neither must the rest. They feared the man I was. The man I am, they'd pity.
Jaime seated himself again and turned to Kettleblack.
Sir Osmond, I do not know you. I find that curious. I fought in tourneys, melees, and battles throughout the Seven Kingdoms. I know of every hedge knight, free rider, and upjump squire of any skill who has ever presumed to break a lance in the lists. So how is it that I have never heard of you, Sir Osmond?
That I couldn't say, my lord.
He had a great wide smile on his face, did Sir Osmond, as if he and Jamie were old comrades-in-arms playing some jolly little game.
I am a soldier, though, not no tawny knight.
Where had you served before my sister found you?
Oh, errand there, my lord.
I have been to Old Town in the south and Winterfell in the north. I have been to Lannisport in the west and King's Landing in the east. But I have never been to here nor there. For want of a finger, Jamie pointed his stump at Sir Osmond's beak of a nose. I will ask once more, where have you served?
In the Stepstones, some in the disputed lands. There's always fighting there. I rode with the gallant men. We fought for Lice, and some for Tyrosh.
You fought for anyone who would pay you.
How did you come by your knighthood? On a battlefield.
Who knighted you?
Sir Robert Stone. He's dead now, my lord.
To be sure. Sir Robert Stone might have been some bastard from the Vale, he supposed, selling his sword in the disputed lands. On the other hand, he might be no more than a name Sir Osmond cobbled together from a dead king and a castle wall. What was Cersei thinking when she gave this one a white cloak? At least Kettleblack would likely know how to use a sword and shield. Sellswords were seldom the most honourable of men, but they had to have a certain skill at arms to stay alive.
Very well, sir, Jamie said. You may go.
The man's grin returned. He left, swaggering. Sir Maron, Jamie smiled at the sour knight with the rust-red hair and the pouches under his eyes. I've heard it said that Joffrey made use of you to chastise Sansa Stark. He turned the white book around one-handed.
Here, show me where it is in our vows that we swear to beat women and children.
I did as his grace commanded me. We are sworn to obey.
Henceforth, you will temper that obedience. My sister is Queen Regent. My father is the King's Hand. I am Lord Commander of the King's Guard. Obey us, none other.
Sir Meron got a stubborn look on his face.
Are you telling us not to obey the king?
The king is eight. Our first duty is to protect him, which includes protecting him from himself. Use that ugly thing you keep inside your helm. If Tommen wants you to saddle his horse, obey him. If he tells you to kill his horse, come to me.
Aye, as you command, my lord.
Dismissed.
As he left, Jamie turned to Sir Balon Swan. Sir Balon, I have watched you tilt many a time, and fought with and against you in melees. I am told you proved your valour 100 times during the Battle of the Blackwater. The King's Guard is honoured by your presence.
The honour is mine, my lord.
Sir Balon sounded weary.
There is only one question I would put to you. You served us loyally, it's true, but Varys tells me that your brother rode with Renly and then Stannis, whilst your lord father chose not to call his banners at all and remained behind the walls of Stonehelm all through the fighting.
My father is an old man, my lord, well past 40. His fighting days are done.
And your brother?
Donal was wounded in the battle and yielded to Sir Elwood Hart. He was ransomed afterward and pledged his fealty to King Joffrey, as did many other captives.
So he did, said Jamie. Even so, Renly, Stannis, Joffrey, Tommen. How did it come to omit Balon Greyjoy and Robb Stark? He might have been the first knight in the realm to swear fealty to all 6 kings. Sir Balon's unease was plain.
Donald erred, but he is Tommen's man now. You have my word.
It is not Sir Donald the Constant who concerns me. It's you. Jamie leaned forward. What will you do if brave Sir Donald gives his sword to yet another usurper, and one day comes storming into the throne room? And there you stand all in white, between your king and your blood. What will you do?
My lord, that will never happen.
It happened to me,
Jamie said. Swan wiped his brow with the sleeve of his white tunic. "You have no answer?"
"My lord," Sir Balin drew himself up, "on my sword, on my honour, on my father's name, I swear I shall not do as you did."
Jamie laughed.
"Good. Return to your duties, and tell Sir Donald to add a weather vane to his shield."
And then he was alone, with a knight of flowers. Slim as a sword, lithe and fit, Sir Loras Tyrell wore a snowy linen tunic and white wool breeches, with a gold belt around his waist and a gold rose clasping his fine silk cloak. His hair was a soft brown tumble, and his eyes were brown as well, and bright with insolence.
"He thinks this is a tourney, and his tilt has just been called."
17, and a knight of the King's Guard," said Jamie. "You must be proud. Prince Aemon, the Dragon Knight, was 17 when he was named. Did you know that?"
"Yes, my lord."
"And did you know that I was 15?
"That as well, my lord."
He smiled. Jamie hated that smile. "I was better than you, Sir Loras. I was bigger, I was stronger, and I was quicker."
"And now you're older," the boy said. "My lord."
He had to laugh.
"This is too absurd. Tyrion would mock me unmercifully if he could hear me now, comparing cocks with this green boy."
"Older and wiser, sir. You should learn from me."
"As you learned from Sir Boras and Sir Meron."
That arrow hit too close to the mark. "I learned from the White Bull and Barristan the Bold," Jamie snapped. "I learned from Sir Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning, who could have slain all five of you with his left hand while he was taking a piss with his right. I learned from Prince Lewin of Dorne, and Sir Oswald Went, and Sir Jonathor Darry. Good men, everyone."
"Dead men, everyone."
"He's me," Jamie realized suddenly. "I'm speaking to myself, as I was. All cocksure arrogance and empty chivalry. This is what it does to you. To be too good, too young."
As in a sword fight, sometimes it is best to try a different stroke.
"It said you fought magnificently in the battle, almost as well as Lord Renly's ghost beside you. A sworn brother has no secrets from his Lord Commander. Tell me, sir, who was wearing Renly's armour?"
For a moment, Loras Tyrell looked as though he might refuse, but in the end he remembered his vows. "My brother," he said sullenly. "Renly was taller than me and broader in the chest. His armour was too loose on me, but it suited Garland well."
"Was the masquerade your notion or his?"
"Lord Littlefinger suggested it. He said it would frighten Stannis's ignorant men-at-arms."
"And so it did."
"And some knights and lordlings, too."
"Well, you gave the singers something to make rhymes about. I suppose that's not to be despised. What did you do with Renly?"
"I buried him with mine own hands, in a place he showed me once when I was a squire at Storm's End. No one shall ever find him there to disturb his rest."
He looked at Jamie defiantly. "I will defend King Tommen with all my strength, I swear it. I will give my life for his if need be. But I will never betray Renly, by word or deed. He was the king that should have been. He was the best of them."
"The best dressed, perhaps," Jamie thought, but for once he did not say it.
The arrogance had gone out of Sir Loras the moment he began to speak of Renly.
"He answered truly. He is proud and reckless and full of piss. But he is not false. Not yet."
"As you say. One more thing, and you may return to your duties."
"Yes, my lord."
"I still have Brienne of Tarth in a tower cell."
The boy's mouth hardened.
"A black cell would be better."
"You're certain that's what she deserves?"
"She deserves death. I told Renly that a woman had no place in the Rainbow Guard. She won the melee with a trick."
"I seem to recall another knight who was fond of tricks. He once rode a mare in heat
against a foe mounted on a bad-tempered stallion. What sort of trickery did Brian use?
Sir Loras flushed.
She leapt. Oh, it makes no matter. She won, I grant her that. His Grace put a rainbow cloak about her shoulders, and she killed him. Or let him die.
A large difference there.
The difference between my crime and the shame of Boris Blunt. She had sworn to protect him. Sir Eamon Kai, Sir Robar Royce, Sir Parman Crane, they'd sworn as well. How could anyone have hurt him, with her inside his tent and the others just outside? Unless they were part of it.
There were five of you at the wedding feast, Jamie pointed out.
How could Joffrey die, unless you were part of it?
Sir Loras drew himself up stiffly.
There was nothing we could have done.
The wench says the same. She grieves for Renly, as you do. I promise you, I never grieve for Ares.
Brienne's ugly and pighead stubborn, but she lacks the wits to be a liar, and she is loyal past the point of sense. She swore an oath to bring me to King's Landing, and here I sit. This hand I lost. Well, that was my doing as much as hers. Considering all she did to protect me, I have no doubt that she would have fought for Renly had there been a foe to fight. But a shadow?
Jaime shook his head.
Draw your sword, Sir Loras. Show me how you'd fight a shadow. I should like to see that.
Sir Loras made no move to rise.
She fled, he said. She and Catelyn Stark. They left him in his blood and ran.
Why would they, if it was not their work? He stared at the table.
Renly gave me the van. Otherwise it would have been me helping him don his armor. He often entrusted that task to me. We had prayed together that night. I left him with her. Sir Parman and Sir Eamon were guarding the tent, and Sir Robar Royce was there as well. Sir Eamon swore Brian had...
Although... Yes? Jamie prompted, sensing a doubt.
The gorget was cut through, one clean stroke, through a steel gorget. Renly's armor was the best, the finest steel. How could she do that? I tried myself, and it was not possible. She's freakish strong for a woman, but even the mountain would have needed a heavy axe. And why armor him, and then cut his throat? He gave Jamie a confused look. If not her, though, how could it be a shadow?
Ask her. Jamie came to a decision.
Go to a cell. Ask your questions and hear her answers. If you are still convinced that she murdered Lord Renly, I will see that she answers for it. The choice will be yours. Accuse her or release her. All I ask is that you judge her fairly on your honor as a knight.
Sir Loras stood.
I shall, on my honor.
We are done, then. The younger man started for the door, but there he turned back.
Renly thought she was absurd. A woman dressed in man's mail, pretending to be a knight. If he'd ever seen her in pink satin and Moorish lace, he would not have complained. I asked him why he kept it close, if he thought her so grotesque. He said that all his other knights wanted things of him, castles or honours or riches, but all that Brian wanted was to die for him. When I saw him all bloody, with her fled and the three of them unharmed, if she's innocent, then Robar and Eamon... He could not seem to say the words.
Jamie had not stopped to consider that aspect of it.
I would have done the same, sir.
The lie came easy, but Sir Loras seemed grateful for it. When he was gone, the Lord Commander sat alone in the White Room, wondering. The Knight of Flowers had been so mad with grief for Renly that he had cut down two of his own sworn brothers. But it had never occurred to Jamie to do the same with the five who had failed Joffrey.
He was my son, my secret son. What am I if I do not lift the hand I have left to avenge mine own blood and seed?
He ought to kill Sir Boris at least, just to be rid of him. He looked at his stump and grimaced.
I must do something about that.
If the late Sir Jaslyn Bywater could wear an iron hand, he should have a gold one.
Cersei might like that, a golden hand to stroke her golden hair and hold her hard against me.
His hand could wait, though. There were other things to tend to first. There were other debts to pay.